While the restaurant industry definitely got a bitter taste of the pandemic, the situation is slowly coming back on the tracks. And one company which is trying to ensure that is delivery service provider Swiggy, who acts as an intermediary between the restaurant operators and the customers. However, not all is well in this fairy tale. At a time when things are yet to get back to normal, the aggregator and the industry per se has been at the receiving end from its partners who have cried foul for the rise in the commission rates and unfair trade practices. Hello and welcome to Money Control. This is Priyanka Sahai and you are tuned into Setting Sail, our weekly podcast that dives through the changing landscape of the entrepreneurship ecosystem and the challenges within. And today, to address the elephant in the room, we have with us none other than Vivek Sundar, Chief Operating Officer of food delivery service provider Swiggy. Hi Vivek, thank you so much for taking time out for us.
Hi Priyanka, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Thank you once again. So Vivek, why don't you begin by actually telling me, I have seen that Swiggy has come out in the open and said that the business is coming back on track post-COVID. Can you take a moment and tell me what you mean by post-COVID? What period are we talking about and what are the numbers currently?
Sure. So as you're aware, this pandemic is actually in India from a business point of view had two broad phases, right? We still are not over the pandemic, but the phases are about a lockdown, you know, with differing intensities, and then a series of opening ups. So if you take the what we are defining as pre-COVID or pre-lockdown is the period that is the January to March period, which was largely COVID unaffected. Part of March was affected, but think about February as the sort of cleanly unaffected period, right? And from there, we had two phases of an intense period of lockdowns from March to May, and then starting June, a series of openings up. And even as we speak right now, there are still restrictions. So what we are referring to as getting back to normal is the period where we are benchmarking with February, which is the clean period before COVID or lockdown happened. And so happy to state that, yes, you're right. We had talked about, you know, the business coming back to normal. The last time I had actually spoken to the media, we had talked about 80-85% of the business coming back. Every single week since then, driven by the consumer sentiment improving, the fear of COVID infections happening through food delivery rightly going down, as well as other means like IPL, and this has been one of the most amazing IPLs as a cricket fan, but even as a business person, I would say it's been great in terms of encouraging consumers to order their favorite food. So we are seeing a lot of our major cities having already reached pre-COVID levels. Bangalore, Mumbai, Hyderabad are the most active metro cities, but even some of the smaller cities are doing brilliantly well. Now, those smaller cities are, you know, doing well for two reasons. One, of course, there is the natural sort of, you know, IPL trend, but also because a lot of the population that were from, let's say, an Ahmedabad or a Jaipur or a Lucknow or a Ranchi were working in, let's say, a Bangalore or a Delhi and have gone back semi-permanently or permanently because now they're working from home. So we now have more consumers in those cities, as a result of which we are getting recovery in those cities too.
The company has achieved 150 to 200% of the pre-COVID order value in select markets. Now, you know, it's not in the terms of volume, but value that you're talking. And correct me if I'm wrong, but conventionally, we've always seen that companies like yours have spoken about the number of orders as well. But in this case, we are talking about value, which is, I would say, a GMV or the order size in totality.
That's correct.
How is the company positioned in terms of volume, if I were to understand? Or is it that post-COVID, the order size have increased because of which the value has recovered?
Sure. So let me sort of give you the underlying consumer trend. I mean, metrics at the end of the day, we use the metrics as a way to look at the business and the health of the business. So let me give you the underlying consumer trends. I'm sure you'll agree that consumers are now in more locations where they are with somebody, whether it's homes where, you know, people are staying in, the entire family is staying in, nobody's going for business trips, or even if you're living with roommates, you're all more locked in than you were pre-COVID, right? Then nobody's going for a business trip, nobody is in office late. So there is more occasions where people are together with other people than before. In office, a lot of people used to order single lunches because they were essentially ordering for themselves. But if office itself is not open and you're working from home and you're basically staying in at home with a partner, then you're mostly ordering not for one person, but for two people. So because the underlying trend is that you're actually in larger households, the order value has gone up between 25 to 30%. Now, obviously, that means that the right measure for whether the health of the business has recovered is order value, because if two people are ordering in the same house, in the past there used to be two separate orders. Today it happens to be one order, but frankly they're ordering for two people. So the value is the right way to measure it, because it's the sum of the two individual orders in the past versus the one order right now. So because of that, we have, of course, we keep a track on order volumes, but the GMV is a better measure for whether the amount of expenditure that consumers are willing to do in the industry has come back or not. And the only reason why the volumes is down is because of the underlying trend of consumers not being as alone and ordering in alone as before.
Fair enough. So if you could also, you know, guide us on the volume metric and address the question, if you think that the average ticket size has increased as compared to the pre-COVID period.
That's correct. So the average ticket size has increased. It's anywhere between 10% higher to sort of 30% higher. That's the range across cities, depending on this underlying consumer habit as before. And order volumes is therefore lagging by about 5 to 10 points, depending on the city versus value. So for example, if value is recovered by, let's say, 85%, in some cities, the order volumes is recovered by 75%, right? Or recovered up to 75%. In some cases, the gap is far narrower because this underlying consumer trend is not there. So therefore, there is no value to volume dilution per se.
How's the company dealing with the unit economics currently? Conventionally, we've seen that companies, especially in the logistics space, in your case, food logistics, if I can call it like that, have focused broadly on the growth metrics. Unit economics have come into the picture only in the last couple of years. However, I'm sure pandemic has taught all of us huge lessons. Two questions there. What are the lessons learned post-pandemic for Swiggy? And how are you treating unit economics at this point in time?
Sure. So let me cover the first question first, which is the lessons learned post-pandemic. There's a lot of lessons that we learned during the pandemic that we believe have helped us become a better company after the pandemic. And and if you think about it, it stemmed from the fact that in the pandemic, when there was a lot of uncertainty and fear, we found creative ways to solve consumer problems and still stay relevant. I read a study somewhere that during the pandemic, Swiggy was one of the top three brands in the country in terms of being relevant to consumers who were largely locked in during the worst stage of the pandemic. Why? Because we were using the fleet that was out there, that was allowed to operate, and not just doing what was originally our purpose, which is food delivery, but we were doing pretty much delivery of anything. You could have used Genie, you could have used groceries, you could have used us for pet food, you could have used us for books, you could have used us for painting supplies. The sheer amount of things that people used us for at a time when they were locked in gave us a lot of learnings on both how what consumers wish to do with a hyperlocal delivery service, as well as what kind of capabilities we need to build in our delivery fleet and our product framework to be able to cater to that. So I think a lot of those learnings have gone into the post-COVID, sort of unlock world in terms of how we operate as a company. The other thing it also taught us, now we are a digital company, so we'd like to believe that because we are a digital-only company, we are quite sort of bullish about the role of technology in consumers' life. But even for us, we did rely a lot in the human interaction to do things like training these on how to handle food and do the order management system. We did rely on a human system of people meeting restaurant partners and onboarding them, right? But during COVID, what it taught us is that humans are amazingly adaptive. So because everybody was locked in, we realized that we could actually onboard our partner ecosystem, which at that point of time was pet food stores, grocery stores, stationery stores, all sorts of stores, and those owners who were never on Swiggy before this, because we were not doing, pet food delivery before pandemic, could be onboarded onto the app completely remotely. We did it through video training modules, through voice calls, through video calls, and we did that completely digitally, which meant that it changed our paradigm of how we can operate even more remote as a company and leverage technology to do stuff like, you know, operating on a daily basis. So I think it's given us a big learning on how much more we can leverage digital to operate as a company. It's also given us great learnings on what to do to solve new consumer problems that have come up as a result of the pandemic.
Okay, let me get back on the unit economic bit after this follow-up question.
Sure.
First, why don't you tell us what amount of the company's current business in terms of value is it getting from food as compared to all the ancillary services that you're offering on your platform?
So that, I mean, this is a very rapidly changing number. So any number I give you will basically be, it'll be a range. But just to give things in perspective, obviously as Unlock has opened, here is the thing. There were 300 cities where we were not allowed to operate food delivery, but we were allowed to operate grocery during the worst of the lockdown. Now in those cities, obviously we had zero food and we had a certain amount of grocery. But we knew that when Unlock happens, people will go out and buy their groceries, and therefore we will have a little reduction in the grocery business, and food will come back because Unlock has happened, restaurants are open, and we are allowed to operate. So the reality right now is that it's sort of a, you know, if you think about it, these are different businesses that are sort of all waxing and waning as different unlocks are happening and as the government is allowing different services to operate, and food is continuing its sort of steady growth. So any number I give you will be relevant only for a week, but not really relevant for the period that we are referring to. But it's safe to say that as we have come to a full sort of near full unlock, etc., you know, well over 80% of our business is still food, and all the other ancillary businesses are waxing and waning depending on which businesses they are. But it's a sizable minority, but not as big as it was during the worst of the lockdown.
Okay, but fair to say that you've learned that a company like yours should not be keeping all its egg in one basket, and perhaps diversifying with be the next key going forward?
Yes, but I'd like to say that our diversification seeds were sown well before the pandemic. For the first 3 years, we defined ourselves as a food delivery company. In fact, our official internal motto was change the way India eats food, and so on and so forth. And then we realized as we basically became 3 years old, somewhere around the fourth year is when we started relooking at our business model, and we realized that what we actually have is three strengths. Strength one is technology. We believe we have great engineers, product managers, business people who leverage and understand technology. The second one is we understand hyper-local operations. We have a very large fleet of people who deliver a very reliable job 24/7. And third, we are very, very close to the consumer, and so we have strong consumer centricity of the urban consumer. With these three strengths, we said, okay, if you're hyper-local operations, you're a technology player, you understand the urban consumer, what are the other services that can be there to serve the consumer? So we actually laid a lot of seeds well before the pandemic. I mean, you would probably know this, but we've been running a grocery pilot in Gurgaon a year before the pandemic. We've been running a version of our Genie service before the pandemic. So we have actually had our diversification strategy as well as pilots in place well before the pandemic. What the pandemic did was to basically give us the opportunity and the confidence to scale some of those things rapidly because the situation demanded it. But I think it's safe to say that we were never stuck in food only for the last 2 years of our existence by changing our focus to being the kings of convenience from actually changing how India eats food.
So currently it's 80-20. Any vision as to going forward, how much of that will sort of diversify?
The right answer is, as with most even large established companies, the right answer is truly we don't know. But what we can say is that we have very strong plans to grow each of our businesses. And at the same time, we have very disciplined frameworks to make sure that we don't sort of, you know, burn too much money and basically waste too much of money, especially during these times, in any one of these ideas. So I think we have strong financial discipline and strong plans. So where the next year would be, we honestly don't have a forecast. And we are fortunate to have great people in our board who also understand the uncertainty of the next year Is there going to be a vaccine? If not, how is it going to change? How are people's behavior is going to change, and so on and so forth. So they've allowed us to give a broad forecast and give a very directional financial plan, but are not holding us to the rigid forecast that perhaps a more stable environment would require of us.
Got it. Now let's come down to the unit economics bit. We've seen that Swiggy as a company, now the focus has shifted from growth to getting into positive unit economics as well. So is it fair to say that on an order level, Swiggy is unit economic positive?
So as you know, as a private company, we don't release financial information broadly. But let me just give you a framework for how we are thinking about unit economics. And hopefully that will give you a directional answer at least of what we're talking about. Right. So obviously, we believe that we need to cut or improve our unit economics across the length and breadth of the P&L. And so starting with order size, because that's a big driver of unit economics, as I've already told you, through a combination of our initiatives as well as consumer behavior, the average order values is already 20-30% bigger than before. And that's a big driver of unit economics. The second thing we have also seen is because the mad rush of customer acquisition isn't true these days. We actually thankfully had done a lot of customer acquisition in the years prior to the pandemic. We find that we don't have to spend as much money in discounting to attract new customers because we already have a very large customer base that was acquired prior to the pandemic. So the amount of discounting that we do for customer acquisition or new customer acquisition or reacquisition is much lower than before because we now have a more loyal customer base. So that again is an important lever of improving our unit economics. The third thing which usually causes unit economics to go bad is if you're basically having too many fleet and the fleet are being paid, too many companies are paying all sorts of monies to the fleet and as a result of which there's a lot of attrition in that fleet and therefore we are having to pay a lot more than the normal market rates to be able to retain that fleet. We are one of the businesses that are still operating. We've been sort of operating in all 500 cities, as a result of which the delivery partners are finding that this is a good source of employment because it's giving them daily earnings, and there are a lot of the other businesses that were using them or attracting them is no longer there. Given that, we don't have to do all of these on-top spending that was crazy during the 2018 period to be able to retain them. That also provides a stable footprint on the cost base. Now, if you take all of those three things, you will find that this business is inherently moving in very strongly across all the levers, positive unit economics. We don't split out our numbers, as I told you, as a private company, but I think it's fair to say that we are very, very happy with the progress towards unit economics positivity, both at the city level as well as at the total level, and consequently, the reduction in burn that we have as a company.
And that's quite comprehensive, Vivek. But on the same note, let me also ask you that as a company, I see Swiggy has now started to focus on delivery charge. So if I'm a customer and I do not have a Swiggy monthly pack or a super value pack, I will be asked to pay for every delivery that I am ordering. Sure. This wasn't how Swiggy had started off. Now, what is the average rate of delivery that you charge your customers, and is that going to be the way it is, or you know, on some orders you plan to erase off the delivery charge as well?
Sure. So let me answer that question in two ways, which is, what is the fair price for a service that customers love? The reality is today is you're either paying, the customer is either paying for the time that he's saving or she's saving by going to the restaurant, or she's paying for the cost that will be incurred if she were to use somebody else to go do that work for her. And in both cases, what I would say is we don't have the same delivery fee across all the cities. Of course, we have differences because the costs are also different. But whatever delivery fees we are charging today are absolutely fair in the sense that the consumer, if they were to try to do that themselves, would find it more expensive to do it. And by that I meant either use some other fleet or use a rick or their own bike and do that piece of work. So we believe that giving it in a way that where the consumer thinks it's better, faster, more convenient and cheaper for me to use Swiggy is the place to keep that price. Otherwise, the price is an unsustainable price. If the consumer found it cheaper to do it themselves, eventually the price won't stick. So the first thing I wanted to state is that our prices that of deliveries that we have are quite fair versus what it actually costs the customer to do it. As a result of which, our business is recovering. I mean, if you think about it, our business wouldn't recover if the customers were saying, hang on, I'm tight on cash. This is totally unreasonable cost. I'm not going to pay for it. You're right that the previous era of rapid growth and rapid customer expansion and rapid market expansion, where we were basically charging very little or perhaps even zero in certain cases, has spoiled the customers to expect zero. But customers are rational at the end of the day. They look at it and say, I understand I was getting a freebie, but is this still fair pricing for what the service I'm getting? If the answer is yes, customers grow. So that's why we are seeing a month-on-month expansion of our business as the unlock is opening up and consumers are coming back to ordering. Otherwise, we would have seen this business grind to a halt. Our recovery would have ground to a halt with that fact.
What is the cost Swiggy incurs while delivering a product to the customer? The industry standard is rupees 60. But can you tell me that with the help of your technology, maybe given that you are leveraging from multiple orders in a specific area, that cost has been brought down?
So the answer to that question is yes. Over time, that cost has been brought down through a combination of strong operating discipline on the ground, as well as technology and algorithms, basically shaving costs off the system in terms of weight and waste and so on and so forth. So the answer is we are obviously best in class in that front. In that the kind of service we provide versus the cost that we incur as a company is best in class. Now, is it well ahead of the 30 rupees that you talked about? The answer is yes. But that's why I said that at the end of the day, the consumer realizes that even if they're paying 25, 30 rupees for delivery, you're still being charged less than what it would have cost them if they had done the job themselves, or what it's costing us to do the piece of work.
Okay, fair enough. You know, currently, post the pandemic, a lot of realization has come back in the market, in the emerging businesses market. We've seen that most of the companies here have been trying to replicate what companies in the Chinese market or, you know, in the Silicon Valley have been doing. However, it's only now that we've realized that India as a market is much different whenever it comes to the disposable income of the customers that are there, the sheer size of the market, the number of internet users who are actually adopting your services. So currently, how are you treating India as a standalone market and not learning your lessons from any of the foreign market and copying, pasting it here in the Indian market?
Sure. I mean, the advantage we have is this is our home market and this is our only market. So while we should always be agile and open to understanding what the folks are doing in Silicon Valley or in China or any of the other technology hub spots, we actually think that it's good to be aware. And even 2 hours ago, actually, there was a team that presented the key learnings that they learned from the, you know, the call that they had with the Chinese team to understand what they were doing. So we are very open to, as a young company, to listening to what other people are doing. But I think it's completely fair to say that we always ask this question saying, is it fit for our Indian consumer? And if the answer is no, it doesn't matter how well it worked in China or in the US, it would never find its way into our product or operations roadmap.
It's a very India-centric approach that you've been having early on.
It's a customer-centric approach. The fact that we happen to be handling the Indian customer means we then say what is relevant for the Indian customer. But as you know, as a fellow Indian, that India is not even a homogeneous sort of monolithic part. There are more diversities inside India than there is in all of Europe put together. So given that, we segment India further into its different diversity elements. And then we say, how do we solve for that consumer? So it's fair to say we're not solving just for India. We're actually solving for the various little groups that exist within India and their unique needs, as it were.
Vivek, you have a bunch of high-tech investors on your cap table, including South African internet giant Naspers. Now, post the pandemic, how has your conversations with your investors changed? What are the concerns that most of the investors sitting on your board have at this point in time, and how often are conversations happening to change strategy, to look at the market differently? Can you take us through that?
Sure. I would like to believe, given that I'm in the sort of startup ecosystem of Bangalore for a while now, and of course, between us, the founders, et cetera, we have a good knowledge, that we are very fortunate in the kind of investors we have on our cap table. I don't believe that we have had any one meeting where they have unfairly pushed us to do something that we as a management team were not aligned to. And that's saying for something, given that this is a six-year-old company and we have had, you know, basically we have had 72 monthly meetings and maybe half of that as board meetings, right? Quarterly board meetings. There's a lot of meetings we've had, but in not one of those meetings that I've observed, there's been sort of, you know, people coming at it with a very unfair bent. I think we've been just fortunate in that one. I just wanted to state that first before I then get into what are the kind of, you know, challenges and conversations we've had. The challenges and conversations we have had are largely in two buckets, right? One is, this is a difficult time for the startup world. Cash and cash burn isn't looked at as favorably for market acquisition or market growth as favorably in 2020 because of the pandemic as it was in 2018. So given that, how's our core business shaping up in terms of its journey towards financial sustainability, which is EBITDA improvement as well as the burn reduction, is something that has kept us engaged for a while now. And I'm happy to note that they've acknowledged very strongly the progress we have made both before COVID, but even more so in the lockdown and post-COVID era over the last 8 months. The second conversation that we are having is around the new businesses, right? Because a lot of new businesses have spawned. We've been interested, as I told you, in new businesses before COVID. COVID has also made us enter into a lot of territories, some with higher risk than others. So obviously they're asking questions around two fronts. One, are we putting ourselves into are we fighting too many battles? And is it the right number of battles to be fighting as far as the new businesses are concerned? And two, how confident are we that we actually have a competitive advantage in these new businesses to continue to scale them and get to market share leadership like we have done in our core business, which is food delivery? And if they feel that we don't have a source of competitive advantage that is going to sustain, then you know that it's not a business to be in for a long term. You have to have an edge which the consumers love, for which you exist and enter into a market. Because a lot of the businesses that we are entering, we are not the first entrants. We are doing grocery delivery. We are not the first people into grocery delivery. We are doing hyperlocal connections a la Dunzo. We are not the first people into that. So a lot of the new businesses that we are in, people are asking us, what's the competitive advantage? And if they see us showing clear proof of competitive advantage, they let us continue, of course, with very strong financial discipline and dates and gates. And those are the two conversations that are happening in the post-pandemic era, which is different from the past, where there's a lot of the conversations were around growth and scaling and what have you.
So broadly, discipline shaping is something which is very much happening and which is rightfully the best thing to do at this point in time. But also, can you tell us, when was the last meeting that you had with your investors and who all participated in that meeting?
So we have a monthly review with all of the investors. In the pre-pandemic era, we used to have a face-to-face meeting that was quarterly. Now, of course, all of the meetings, both the monthly and the quarterly, have turned to virtual because obviously there's no travel. And all of the investors that we have always participate. We have a fantastic attendance. I've never seen any meeting happen. One of our board members or one of our investors is staying away. I think they're very interested in this business. It's a large business after all. It's one of their favorite businesses, as we hear them say. And so we've had them participate all the time. The last meeting, I think today is what, 3rd of November? We had the last meeting 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about the cloud kitchen sector.
Throw two simultaneous questions. I briefed in the intro that, Swiggy conventionally has been having issues with restaurant service providers who've been crying foul over increasing commission rates. This happens at a time when Swiggy as a company has been entering into the cloud kitchen space. Now, how does both of these things go hand in hand? Can you address both these issues simultaneously?
Sure. So first of all, I just wanted to clarify on the point you made. Yes, the restaurant partners had challenges with the aggregators, and that challenge is obviously some of it continues on to now. So that's factually true. But I think it will be fair if you were to look at the records, and these are all publicly available records on what actually has happened, is that they found us a willing partner to discuss transparently all the issues. And we engaged with them multiple times in the 2019 period, and we found solutions for some of them. Some of the other ones we move to let's work together to find solutions for them. Some of them we actually gave solutions. So by and large, you would find that we have never really had any business disruption as a result of the tension that was there between us specifically and them. Have they had issues with aggregators in general? The answer is yes. But for us, we've never had our business disrupted because we know they are interested in business. They are a business. They will have questions to ask. There is no partnership that should basically be one where one can't question the other. But I think it's completely fair to say not one day of business has been disrupted despite the tensions for us. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, as the pandemic happened, their biggest problem right now as a restaurant industry, as I'm sure you've reported on it as well, is that because a lot of their business used to happen on dine-in, their revenues used to be on dine-in, their costs, a lot of it are linked to dine-in, right? If they have expensive real estate and they're paying a rental on that, those are costs that they're incurring every single day. Now, if consumers aren't visiting them because of lockdown or are now visiting them very little because of all these social distancing norms and fear and everything else, then it's fair to say that they are in very severe stress. I think them plus the airline industry plus the entertainment industry, a fair bit of these industries are very severely affected. So we do have a lot of sympathy for that fact that they are actually having a cost base that is not tenable. And so one of the things we have done in two waves actually is, and Brian can give you the details on this one, but we have given two sets of packages, which we call the jumpstart package, which is to revive, you know, either very, you know, sickly businesses that have been devastated because of COVID or, you know, businesses that are really suffering in terms of their financials and cash flow, to help them come back on their feet, because these are proud entrepreneurs. They'd not like to get, you know, handouts for the sake of it. They'd like to basically get back to business. So they're looking for a bridge to get back to business. And therefore, what we have given them is a package that allows them to quickly get back to business, get back to a healthier top line, which then allows them to defray the costs, and that way, get healthy as an industry. So we've had fantastic adoption of the package that we gave. Over 50,000 restaurants in all over India took one or many more aspects of our Jumpstart Package 1 and Jumpstart Package 2, which is a very, very high rate of adoption. And we're happy to say that not only did this allow for a little less mortality than otherwise would have happened, so we are happy to have done our little bit there, but we are actually seeing a lot of new restaurants that are coming out of the ashes of the older ones and coming and wanting to be on our platform. We are actually having more new restaurants wanting to be on Swiggy in the post-pandemic era on a monthly basis than we did pre-pandemic. If that is not a sign of optimism about this industry and, you know, need to enter into providing food for consumers and doing so in a digital manner, I don't know what else is. So we are very optimistic about the fact that while there has been some irrecoverable damage in certain parts, and obviously that's sad, just like with, I mean, as a citizen, I'm sure we are sad that COVID has happened, whether it's our country or any other country. The reality is looking far more rosy about the future than it was even 3 months ago. And so we are happy to have played a little bit of our part in doing that. Do we still have unresolved issues with restaurants and restaurant associations? Absolutely, yes. But it is important for us to keep engaging and talking and resolving them one by one, because we have businesses to run and there will always be things we agree on and things we disagree on.
It's quite heartening to hear how Swiggy actually is coming up and, I would say the savior for most of these restaurant operators, which very likely you pointed out, the way the services have been shut, the way people are still apprehensive of going and dining out. So on that scale, I mean, I'm sure Swiggy, much like any of the other food aggregators, helping them cope up with the order losses. However, at the same time, you also have Cloud Kitchen. Now, I know that Swiggy has scaled down the Cloud Kitchen business, but you still run this operation. My question to you is, at a time when Cloud Kitchen is already there, this is much like a private label that any e-commerce company runs. Is there no conflict of interest that you would be having as compared to a similar restaurant giving similar food?
So let me clarify, Priyanka, because maybe there's some confusion on Cloud Kitchen versus the reality. Essentially, the biggest program we have, which are cloud-only kitchen programs, is something called Swiggy Access, right? Now, what is Swiggy Access? It's basically saying, hey, We think that your great food, which is in, let's say, Kormangla, should be available to Whitefield too. So dear restaurant partner, rather than you having to go and look for real estate and find a restaurant and basically do the dine-in and then onboard onto us, why don't you basically move to the cloud kitchen that we have, the access kitchen that we have in Whitefield, and basically just send in your culinary staff and pay us a rental for the property that you, or the part of the property that you use, and therefore in a significantly asset-light manner where you don't have to worry about opening up, you know, a dining restaurant, serve the consumers of Whitefield. Now that is our single biggest program. So it is absolutely loved by the restaurants, because it allows them to expand their wings across either different parts of the city or to new cities at very little capital cost, because all they have to do is to provide the staff and the know-how of how to prepare those famous dishes. And they actually have a ready business because they also have a means to market to the consumers out there. So the vast majority of our cloud kitchens, which are access kitchens, are super popular with our restaurants. And by the way, that is like over 90% of the business is with that type of business. And those are things that restaurants like, because it's allowing them to expand their geographic footprint and their customer footprint. The part that you're referring to is private labels, where we decided that there are certain niches that operate in the market where the restaurant community isn't solving for them, because we understand the consumers. We've created our own sort of brands to solve those problems. But we are actually very happy if restaurants A, copy that, or they want to make that, and therefore are able to actually expand the market bigger than otherwise would happen with just one person trying to do it. So in that sense, it is a market creation opportunity that we have, and we do that with multiple sort of types of food. And we're super happy that actually when, you know, if you take one of our brands like the Bold Company, you know, 3 years ago, there was only one brand called the Bold Company, which was us. Today, if you open Swiggy in Bangalore, there will be maybe 10 or 12 brands of local restaurants running food in a bowl, or complete food in a bowl, and selling it as versions of, you know, the Bold Kitchen.
Even having similar sounding names,
maybe even unique names in that sense. But this is a market that is expanded. So anything that is basically going after a niche and allowing people, we're not copywriting it. We're saying, you please enter. It is a large cake. And in fact, the pie expansion rather than sharing the pie is the goal. So we do that. And so while there are tensions that are out there, likely so, it will never be stress-free. I would say that the proof of the pudding is in the fact that many restaurants have legitimately copied and sometimes even improved on the offering that we've given. And so that's the ringing endorsement of what we're doing in terms of a business choice.
Okay, so it's just not one side of the coin. I mean, even the so-called quote-unquote copying is happening from the industry side as well. Okay, now, Vivek, why don't you tell me a little bit about how is alcohol delivery, which Swiggy launched a couple of months back, is shaping up across the city? You've gone online so far.
So, first of all, alcohol, as you know, is a very tightly regulated central and state subject. Different parts of it are at the center and many parts of it are at the state. So alcohol is not one of those things where we can make a national plan. It has to be a state level approval, comfort level that the state administration has to open it up. And once they open it up and give us the authority, then we then work in a way that is with all of the safety norms that they ask us to do for alcohol. So, for example, of course, we don't have age verification for food delivery, but for alcohol, we need to have age verification to make sure that it's above the prescribed age. So we have actually worked in a way where it is agile and fast, where there is approval, but in a careful manner based on the guidelines that have been provided. And we are actually quite hopeful and happy seeing the progress in the states that we opened up, you know, places like Bengal and Jharkhand, etc., were the first to open up. We've been very happy. So we are hopeful that more states will open up. And as more states open up, as they come with their own unique rules and regulations, we are happy to follow, because this is a sensitive subject. And we are actually super happy in the way the consumers have responded, because, of course, for many consumers, it had just meant that at a click of a button, a legitimate above the legal age consumers willing to order liquor and have it responsibly in their home is able to do that. So we are quite optimistic about it, but we are being careful and deliberate in sync with the expansion of it.
How many states have you already entered into, and which are the other states you're targeting next? Conversations happening in those states?
So conversations are happening with all of the states in the country. Some of our larger states are still in conversations. We don't have a business yet for example, in Karnataka or Tamil Nadu. Some of the more newer states that are probably more innovative in the sense because they are coming off a different footprint are the ones where we opened up. In fact, the first state that opened up, the first set of states that opened up were all in the east. It is progressing slower than we would all like, but we are not pushing it any more than what we are just engaging with the government partners, showing them the data, allowing them to make the decision. We don't want to be in a situation where we have over-aggressively or assertively pushed anybody to doing it. So that's the way to look at it. It's very different here because we want to make sure we're responsible. So it is still in less states than there are in the Union of India, but we are hoping that one by one, all the states will open up, including the big ones like Maharashtra, Karnataka, etc.
Okay. Now, quick one last question, Vivek. You know, when the pandemic happened, when the volumes had gone down, Swiggy as a company had laid off around a little over 1,000 employees from its company. Now, given that we're talking about recovery, given that we're talking about order value scaling up, what is the plan in terms of the employees who were laid off, in terms of salary restructuring? Where are we positioned on those lines?
Sure. So a couple of things. One is that even though, you know, we went into that sort of very uncertain, very negative times, one of the things I want to say is that we were very careful in making sure that we are helping protect as much as possible these employees financially, even after they are not on our rolls. And that included both the physical aspects of monetary compensation as well as health coverage and stuff like that. So even till now, those laid off employees still have health coverage that actually has been paid for by Swiggy, as we speak, right? So they were, we also had an outplacement system that allowed us to place them in other companies, both young and new, that were, young and old, that were starting up and needed the high quality talent that Swiggy had, because these are not people who were laid off for performance reasons. These are just because the business had scaled down and we didn't see how we could maintain that high employee cost base with the volumes at, you know, less than a third of the original volumes, which is really when we did that. Now, as the orders are coming back, are we back to hiring? The answer is yes. Does it mean that we will hire some of those employees back? The answer would be yes. But we are also finding that some of these new businesses need new skills. So while we are back to hiring, the hiring may actually not include, may include a lot of people who were not previously part of Swiggy, because those are new skills that we want to bring into the company. Or experiences that we want to bring into the company to cater to the new business problems that we are coping with. So I think it's fair to say that we are back to hiring. We're still being very careful in our hiring, but it is equally fair to say that while we absolutely did not enjoy that experience of letting go of people back in the midst of the pandemic, we tried as much as possible to adopt the best practices from the rest of the industry and then try to do better than that in terms of being more generous with it than the others were, just to make sure that we are able to reward them for the work that they had done.
So how many people are to be hired and in what span of time?
I don't think we have a very large number as yet, because as I told you, some of our new businesses are still relatively young. As we see promise in those new businesses and we basically get into a place where we say, okay, we've got a model that we think is now ready
name
for
these
split
new
scaling,
positions for us?
That's when the large scaling requirements would come in. So right now we are making very careful pinpointed hires. We're not making very mass hires, but we will be back to it once we realize which of these new businesses need more people as we get into the blitz scaling part of that business.
Which new businesses are we referring to, Vivek?
So anything other than food is still small, right? Remember I told you about the 80-20. So anything other than food, it's still not in all the cities. It's still not, you know, scaling to the extent that it should. So any of these new businesses, whether they're the grocery businesses or the pet food business or the genie business or any of these businesses, as they get into this blitz scaling phase is when we might need more people. But right now, we are still keeping a very tight watch on consumer centricity for these businesses to make sure consumers love the offering. Because if they love the offering, then we want to scale it. We don't want to scale something that consumers only half love, because none of these businesses are businesses where we are alone in. There are good competitors in each of those businesses.
Right. But fair to say that Swiggy is happy to have its employee back, given, the relevance that they come with.
Indeed. Any good employee, whether it's a returning employee or a completely new employee, is welcome, given that the layoff was not at all linked to performance.
Okay. All right, then on that note, Vivek, I would really like to thank you for taking time out for us.
It was a pleasure talking to you, Priyanka. Thanks for your questions and thanks for keeping it, keeping me on my toes.
So that's all that we have for this episode of Setting Sail. Meanwhile, if you have any comments or queries, you can write down to us. Our email is mcpodcast@nw18.com. You can also follow us on Twitter with our user IDs @moneycontrolcom and @PriyankaSahai. Till then, for more news, views and updates, stay logged on to moneycontrol.com.